Welcome to What's in Your Way is the Way with your host, Mary O'Malley, inviting you to open to the radical notion that in your life, whatever you perceive to be in your way is the way. In other words, your challenges, whether they be relationships, compulsions, finances, or illness, come with gifts embedded in them that can bring healing and allow you to experience the joy of being fully alive. Mary is a counselor, awakening mentor, inspirational speaker, and the author of What's in the Way is the Way, The Gift of Our Compulsions, Belonging to Life, and The Magical Gift of Aliveness. What's in Your Way is the Way with Mary O'Malley is part of Evolutionary Voices for the Quantum Age. Heard Monday through Friday at 8 a.m. and 8 p.m. Eastern on the Dream Vision 7 radio network.
Hello and welcome to What's in Your Way is the Way. Today, we're going to be exploring pain as a healer. I mean, probably you've never quite imagined it that way. We need to look at, there is so much pain in life. There's physical pain, you know, it hurts to stub your toe, you know. And as we get older, our body has more and more challenges, and it eventually breaks down. You know, all of our loved ones will die before us, or we will die before them. And yet our main relationship with pain is resistance. Let's look at, where does that take us? To resist our physical, our mental, and our emotional pains. Well, let's start with stubbing your toe. You know, just imagine stubbing your toe. And what we usually do is we go right up into our head and we get mad at ourselves for having left the thing out, or mad at somebody else, and we just want this pain in our toe to go away. Does that help the pain move through us? Well, if you look very carefully, you'll see that when we tighten down around our pain, whether it's physical pain, mental pain, or emotional pain, we actually amplify our pain. When the mind reacts, the body reacts, and it intensifies all pain, whether it's physical, mental, or emotional pain. This urge to close down around our pain is exhausting, and it shuts us off from life. I love to use metaphors, and I just want you to imagine the most beautiful house you could ever imagine, and, you know, the most exquisite gardens and soaring windows and light-filled rooms. That is the house of our essence. That is the place that we lived when we were very, very young, before thoughts began to fill up our head, and, you know, life would just pass through us, you know, madness, sadness, gladness. We hadn't yet learned how to tighten down. But slowly and surely, we did. You know, they say that very young children, you know, when they operate on them, they don't have to use a lot of anesthetic because they have not yet learned to be afraid of their pain. But as we grow up, because all of us were basically raised by what I call unconscious giants who wounded us in ways that they didn't even know they were wounding us. Even if they loved us, they gave us our sacred wounds. And so imagine beginning to close the doors and of the house of your being, and imagine beginning to pull the curtains closed, and then imagine more and more you don't live in the house of your being. Instead, you move downstairs to a windowless bedroom, which is representative of this kind of mind that we live in most all the day long, this kind of mind that is trying to get to the good stuff and get rid of the bad stuff. And if you had a little door on your forehead and you could watch this storyteller all day long, you'll see it's basically at war with life. Whether it's in pure resistance, you know, to the stubbed toe or an angry boss or a loss, you know, and the deep sadness that comes, or whether it's even, you know, the pain of trying to hold on to beautiful states of meeting the love of your life and then discovering that a year later that he was married to somebody else. So in that windowless bedroom, which is this mind that is always thinking about life rather than being life, is a big screen TV. And, you know, the mind can show you anything, you know, and you can watch anything. And you know, when the mind is running a romantic story, it's happy. And when the mind discovers that it has a cancer diagnosis, it's devastated. I want you to get the sense that this windowless bedroom cuts you off from life. Joseph Campbell in The Power of Myth put this quote on the very first page of the very first chapter, and I put it on the very first page of the very first chapter of my first book, Belonging to Life. And it goes something like this. People say that what we're searching for is the meaning to life. I don't think that's what we're searching for at all. What we're searching for is the experience of being alive, so that experiences on the physical plane resonate in our very innermost being, and we again know the rapture of being alive. It's probably quite a while since you have known the rapture of being alive, because you, like most people, are down in the windowless bedroom thinking that your thoughts are reality. But if we are here to come back to life, to know the joy of being fully alive, life brings sledgehammers. You know, two of the walls of that bedroom touch the outside, and life starts bringing these sledgehammers, and the sledgehammers of, you know, helpless, hopeless despair, the sledgehammers of fear of the future. You lost your job, you know, are you going to lose your house? The sledgehammers of a child getting ill. And all the while we're in that windowless bedroom with hammers and nails and boards, and then spackle and paint, trying to shore up the walls of this resistant mind. But if you're lucky, pain, the sledgehammer of pain, will come to your life. And even though you're desperately in there trying to, you know, shore everything up, one day the sledgehammer makes it through. And all of a sudden, you smell something different, fresh air. And you're so intrigued by this, you go over to this crack and you look out and you see that there is a whole other world, a world that you left when you were very, very young, a world that you can feel that is your natural place. So there begins to become this longing to get out of the prison. And of course, we try to break down the prison ourselves, and, you know, we meditate for hours on end, or we think just positive thoughts and so on and so forth. But really and truly, one of the most powerful ways to open beyond this prison of this windowless bedroom of our mind is to allow pain to become our fierce and benevolent teacher. What do I mean by that? Well, I think it is very helpful to think of us as coming in three layers. And the top layer is this mind that is always busy doing life. It's that wonderful quote, I think I've already said it a couple of times, you know, in these shows, but I just love this quote from Alan Watts. no matter how many times you say the word water, it will never be wet. In other words, we can think about water just like we think about life, but it keeps us cut off from the actual living experience of water. That windowless bedroom keeps us cut off from the actually living experience of life that's happening right now, that is always new right now. So this top layer is the human doingness of that, of us. And, oh my God, we have 65,000 thoughts a day, and that's exhausting. But it's been so long since we've been out, really spent much time outside of the windowless bedroom, that we forget that there is a whole other world here happening outside of our ideas about it. And then the second layer is all the stuff we try to push away. It is physical pain. It is mental pain. It is emotional pain, many of them having roots all the way back into our childhood, the pain of fear, the pain of not enoughness, the pain of loneliness, the pain of irritation even, and doubt and confusion, and the pain of helpless, hopeless despair. So there really is a way out of that top layer, and it is learning the art of turning towards. Remember what we talked about earlier, we go away. It's like a lion in the woods, you know, and we come across a lion, and what do? We run away. What does the lion do? It chases after us. But what would happen if we learn how to turn towards, you know, here in the Northwest, when we were trained in backpacking, if you come across a cougar in the woods, they say, don't run, turn towards it. And lift your jacket up to make yourself bigger and just stand there in stillness. And if you're not between the cougar and her little ones, that cougar will turn away. So we're learning the art of turning towards. This is what Rumi talks about in The Guest House. Why is that his most popular poem? You know, because it is all about turning towards. He says, you know, all of this, every morning, I say every moment a new arrival, a joy, a meanness, a depression. He says, meet them at the door laughing. I can't quite doing that. I can meet them at the door with my heart. And then he says something very important. For each has been sent as a guide from the beyond to clear you out for some new delight. What a novel idea that this lion of all of our fears and everything uncomfortable that we just want to get away from. Actually, when we, you know, we're running, and then we feel the breath of the lion on our calves, and we run harder, and then eventually we fall down. And we're absolutely certain that this lion is going to kill us, this lion of all of the stuff that we have turned away from inside of ourselves our whole life. And the lion screeches to a halt and sticks out his tongue. You figure it's, you know, to take his jaws and clamp down on you. And on his tongue is a gift. And in that moment, you realize that all of your running away from the unpleasant in your life actually created the prison walls of that windowless bedroom. What we're beginning to learn how to do is to be curious about pain. What we're learning how to do is to be spacious around pain, whether it's physical, mental, or emotional pain. And this is where alchemy happens, you know, in the last half of The Guest House, which most people never see, because if you Google The Guest House, it's always just the first half of it. And the second half is a little confusing. It's not quite as clear as the first half. I think that's why it's usually not out there. But there is a line in that second half that is one of the most important lines a human being can hear, and that is, learn the alchemy that true human beings know. As soon as you accept the difficulties you've been given, a door opens. We could say it this way. Learn the alchemy that true human beings know. As soon as you get curious about your pain, as soon as you turn towards your pain, a door opens. So what do I mean by that? I've learned so much of this from Stephen Levine, who said he learned it from thousands of people on their deathbeds, that people that resisted the dying process, and that's when our pain is the greatest, the pain of the physical pain, the pain of losing everything, the pain of, you know, losing our loved ones, the fear, the fear stories about what is to come. And he said his main teachers were two Tibetan lamas and thousands of people on their deathbeds. And in one of his books called Who Dies, he talks about this woman who he worked with. And this is a woman who had gotten cancer, and then she went to a cancer treatment center and learned how to work with pain. And they actually asked her to stay on. And she had trained in, you know, Tibetan pain techniques and American Indian, you know, pain techniques and the pain techniques that she had learned from this institute. And she was their pain teacher. But then the cancer came back. And the tumor wrapped around her spine. And at that point, all she could do was lay down. And Stephen sat on a coffee table right next to her. She was laying down on a couch. And for the first time ever, he took her towards her pain. Not a way as we have been conditioned to do, but towards the pain. And, of course, we think it's this monster and it's, you know, going to just get amplified and is going to take us over. But that's not the truth, whether it's a physical pain, a mental pain, or emotional pain. That as we go towards something very magical begins to happen, we begin to soften around our experience. She began to let all of her fear-based thoughts and the tightening in her body around the pain, she began to give them space. She began to investigate this thing that she had run away from her whole life. And she said, "I was in pain for years, but before going into it and examining it, I would been hard put to describe what pain is." So she began to investigate it. What is the texture of this sensation? Is it hot? Is it cold? Does it stay in one place? Does it move around? Does it vibrate? What is its shape? Does it have tendrils? What actually is the experience that mind so quickly calcifies with labels of pain? An emergency. She began to learn how to move towards instead of a back. And she said there was a spaciousness, a gentleness involved in this investigation that I never associated with my pain. And she said the direct experience of her pain was quite different from what she imagined. She said that indeed most of what she called pain was actually her resistance to it. Wow, just take a moment and let that in and let yourself soften with that long, slow out-breath that is so powerful because it begins to turn off the fight-or-flight response and begins to turn on the calming aspect of our nervous system. In opening and entering into her sensations, she noticed that the pain didn't stay in one place or even maintain one shape. It was vibrating and constantly changing. It wasn't like the hot laser beam that she had imagined it to be in her resistance to it. It was not some solid knot of pain, but rather multiple changing sensations. Sometimes she experiences heat, sometimes tingling, sometimes pressure. You know, in that letting go of her resistance to her pain, actually her mind began to calm down. There was space, and the mind goes crazy around resistance. The more pain we have and the more we resist it, the more the mind gets crazy, and then we get into this vicious loop of the mind getting tighter and tighter and tighter, and our pain amplifying, you know, whether it's physical or emotional pain, you know. And that is when we begin to move into either judgment of ourselves, you know, my God, I do everything wrong, or the no way out, the helpless, hopeless despair. But being there with these changing sensations allowed her to become one with her experience, and it brought a quietness to her mind, because pain can be such a clear object of investigation. And she saw that all the techniques she had acquired for ridding herself of pain were, by their very nature, subtly cultivating the resistance that actually amplified not only her pain, but the suffering in her mind. And until she looked directly at the experience of her pain, those methods, whose goal was the removal of the pain, suddenly reinforced her desire to withdraw. It suddenly reinforced those walls of the prison of her mind. But she said to Stephen after this exploration, she said now pain was no longer her enemy. No longer was she trying to pry her awareness away from the pain. She was able to actually trust it, to open around it, to direct her curiosity to the pain. And she discovered right there, as she was present for her pain, this field of ease and beingness that had always been there. But she hadn't noticed it because the resistance just tightened everything. It tightened her body, it tightened her mind, it tightened her heart. And it's almost like this magnified, that it became this gigantic, huge, horrible thing that was happening. But as she began to soften around it, as she began to become curious around it, the mind quieted. There was more spaciousness. And all of a sudden, she could touch that field of being, that field of ease and joy that is always here no matter what is happening. You know, Stephen would talk about, you know, the people that he walked with them through their death that just could not open up. And he talked about the level of suffering that they experienced as resistance got stronger and stronger and everything began to tighten more. But he also talked about the people that really discovered with help, because, boy, we're not used to doing this, how to go towards, how to soften, how to give space to whatever pain was showing up. And he said, so many of them died in radiance, in joy, in light just pouring out of them, because they had stepped out of that windowless bedroom and they were now fully here with life, even though it contained a lot of pain. And this woman that he was working with on the couch said, it's all the pains of my life that I have pulled back from that have actually imprisoned me. And she said, I can now also not only be present for my pain, but be present for my fear and my doubt and my restlessness and my irritation and my not enoughness, because she knew now how to go towards rather than away. So there's a woman that I worked with a number of years ago that was extremely suicidal. And I learned from Stephen, he said so many people he worked with were suicidal. You know, they were dealing with major illnesses. And he said, in that process of meeting them, of doing the same thing we're talking about with this other woman on the couch that you actually go towards and you meet the pain, he said, when you meet somebody there that is really suicidal and give them space to be there, you don't try to talk them into it, but you just meet them right where they are, most people did not commit suicide. Because they just needed, in this intense pain, this possibility of this way out. But if you meet them there, and if you meet them in the heartache of everything, of all the loss that is happening, they begin to be able to meet it themselves. They begin to be able to have space around whatever they were experiencing, and so they didn't need to kill themselves. What we're talking about is befriending our pain. What we're talking about is discovering that pain, in no matter what form it comes from, is a fierce and loving teacher. It is the sledgehammers on the walls of our prison. And the safest thing you'll ever do is turn towards your pain. You do have to have skills. That's why in What's in the Way is the Way, there's a 10-week process, you know, that we start very slowly. It's at the end of each of the 10 chapters where you learn the art of turning towards and learn the art of giving space to whatever you are experiencing. And somewhere there I write about Pema Chodron's dream that I heard this years ago. Pema Chodron, the wonderful, amazingly wise Buddhist nun who has written many, many books. And somebody told me this. I didn't hear this from Pema, but somebody told me that Pema once had a dream, and this was before she became a Buddhist, and she was in that standard resistance to what she was experiencing. And over again, she had this dream of this monster chasing her. And right when the monster was ready to get to her and devour her, she would wake up in great terror. And so she told a friend of hers about this dream. And the friend said, have you ever thought of turning around and saying hello to the monster? And Pema said, heck no. And so she had the dream again a number of times. And even in the dream, she could kind of remember this idea of turning towards. And she would just run all the faster, because we have been taught that pain is a monster and we must get as far away from it as we can. And then one day in the dream, as she is running, here comes this impenetrable wall, and she just had to stop. And with great trepidation, she turned around, and two very, very important things happened. Number one, the monster stopped. It didn't come and devour her. And number two, the monster had pink fingernails. So, that's why I say, when you have the skills, the safest thing you'll ever do is turn towards your pain, and with the right skills, because your pain is the brick, your resistance to your pain is the brick and mortar of the walls of your prison. So I had worked with this young woman, you know, who was suicidal, just meeting her, and it was pretty intense, because she could allow that for a moment and then off the mind would go, and with this litany of why she shouldn't live. And I just kept on meeting her right where she was. And after a couple of sessions, you know, she called and I said, okay, who's here? And she said, the one that wants to kill herself. And I said, can she talk? Can she share with us her world? And she began to talk. And for the first time, this woman wasn't identifying. She would begin to start identifying with it. And then I would gently say something to bring her back into the place where she was just meeting the pain. And as we did this, she began to cry. And she just cried and cried. And I said, you know, and now can the tears can the tears speak? And she said, when you said to that part inside of me that who wants to die, she has a right for her view of the world. That was what broke her open into this spaciousness that now could meet her emotional pain in her heart. And that was a turning point in her life. The one that wanted to kill herself was still here, at times. But now she began to realize that that one that wanted to kill herself was the only way that she could figure out how to survive the level of pain she was experiencing, which was amplified through her resistance to it. And so then we began to explore the what was it that the one that wanted to die was trying to push away. And it was just so powerful. It was a lifetime of this belief that she was not enough and she never would be enough. You know, remember, we took on all these spells when we were very young, and I love the word spells because it's something that's laid over the top of it. It's not true, and they can be lifted. You know, I had so many spells, and I had the same spell she did, and that's why I tried to kill myself 3 times and, you know, and ate endlessly, ate and gained 97 pounds once in a year and washed all of that down with alcohol and drugs, all trying to get away. And as I began to use my eater, because by the time I was awakening, the one that wanted to kill herself, you know, that had calmed down. And now it was my eater, and I realized that whenever I wanted to eat, overeat, eat unskillfully, there was something that needed me. And so I began to no longer hate my compulsion. It was a finely crafted survival system. It was trying to help me survive this, what felt like endless pain, and what felt like if I opened to the pain, I would die. And now the eater was helping me, and I, you know, would get curious. And sometimes all I could do is say, "Is what are you taking care of?" But slowly and surely, I learned more and more. So, you know, what I explore in the new book, "What's in the Way," how to be present for what we are experiencing. So how do we do this? The first thing that is so important to know is that we have been conditioned to turn away. And that just amplifies our pain. It's like if you had a very sore wrist, and I came with my hand and grabbed your wrist and tightened down around it, that would intensify the pain of your wrist. And then if you tried to get away and we started fighting and I gripped even tighter, that would intensify your pain. That's what we've learned how to do with our pain. And believe you me, most all of our pain you can follow into the very roots of a child. You know, that's why when you're in deep pain, you know, you feel like you get so young and then you're embarrassed that you're so young. But the roots of our pain, even our physical pain, because our body tightens down around these feelings that we've buried deep inside, but those roots are all the way back into our childhood. So that's the first step, is to know that that tightening down actually does not heal our pain. The first step is to begin to contemplate the idea of actually softening around our pain. And this is just such a novel concept that is so powerful when we really get the gift of giving our pain space. This is why in childbirth, they have you do breathing practices. You know, I had two children. I had, you know, at-home births. Well, the first one wasn't at home. It was at a naturopathic office. And so I had to drive 2 hours in labor, you know, to the office. And then my husband at that time wasn't really trained to coach me. And so I began to tighten down around all the contractions. And this took 18 hours. And it was just, oh, my goodness, you know, so painful, and to resist every contraction. And yet that's what we do in our lives. We resist every contraction, even the tiniest of contractions. And then in the second birth, I had it at home. I was living with my midwife. She was just the most amazingly wonderful friend. And my son came in just around 5 hours, and I rode every single wave. I stayed open to it. And as I stayed open to the waves, the body naturally and easily opened. And there was only one wave that I contracted down around when my friend was out of the room. And when he came, it was just filled with light. You know, the whole room was. And I really, really was able to see the power of opening around pain. And so this is why they have you breathe. So it's very, very powerful to work with breath. And if you're interested in that, you can email Martha@MaryOMalley.com, and she can send you this wonderful chapter from my book, The Gift of Our Compulsions, on breath, and also I have a two-part CD on breath, that to befriend our breath, to begin to see how our breath can become this biofeedback mechanism, that we can begin to see how we hold our breath most all the time because we are in that windowless bedroom trying to do life. We have forgotten how to relax into life and let life dance through us as us. And breath can be extremely powerful in opening us, in keeping the fight or flight, the resistant mechanism, soft and calm, so that we can begin to go exploring. And as we go explore and actually befriend our pain, then we discover that space around the pain. And the chances of the pain moving through us, even if it's a stubbed toe, it happens so much quicker. Although we can't go there to say, okay, if I'm with you, you know, will you go away? You know, that doesn't work. It really is a core intention to give the pain space to be there. And believe you me, having been somebody that has lived in a lot of pain, physical pain and mental and emotional pain, that to live in spaciousness around pain is, I don't even know, nirvana, you know. It is such a joy to have the capacity to have pain arise. You open around it, you give it your loving attention, and it moves right through you. Now, we begin to get curious about our pain. Yes, we've understood that, you know, we all have got pain, and, you know, and their pain is inherent in this thing called life, and we begin to understand that we're softening around it and giving it space to be. Now, start with the little pains. I'm working with somebody now that is in tremendous pain, nerve pain all over her body, and she's just a dear, dear friend, and the medical world doesn't have an answer for it. And so it just wakes up every single bit of fear that she has ever had, you know, in her life. And of course, the mind then tightens down around the pain, and then the mind tightens down around the future and what's going to happen, and then the mind tightens around the despair of all of this loss of her life. But what she realizes over and over again, and remember, you know, we have lived in this resistance for our whole life, so a little bit of this awareness goes a long way. She is beginning to truly realize that we come in three layers. And the top layer is the mind that wants things to be different, that resists. The second layer is all of the stuff that we have pushed away in our lives, including her physical pain and her mental and emotional pain. But the third layer is this vastness of being. Take a moment and just shake a hand. Just shake it, shake it, shake it, shake it. And now stop shaking it and pay attention. Can you feel the tingle? That's energy moving. That is what we begin to get in touch with, this aliveness, this field of ease and being that is always here, that we don't notice it because the mind is so resistant and it's so busy trying to do life. And yes, this is an artificial way of shaking your hand, but I want you to get a sense of what happens when energy moves, when we begin to go towards, when we begin to soften around our pain at whatever level it is, energy begins to move again, and there is this field of being that is our home, that is our natural state, and we're all homesick. And most people go to their deathbeds caught in that top layer, trying to resist and push away everything it's afraid of, so that they can't open to this field of being. And that's what, you know, Stephen would say. People that could open to their pain as they were dying actually died in radiance. But what this woman has discovered is that the pain, that when the mind is just terrified and is just grieving all the losses, there's very little that she can do about that. It's just like a tsunami wave. And so, as we have discovered before, that you turn that over to life, you know, because life is breathing you. Life is beating your heart, and there is help there. There is support there, even in our darkest of places, by simply turning it over to life. That means asking a question without looking for an answer. You know, what is the way through this? What am I ready to see here? What is the gift that life is giving me through this pain? And then you just let it go. And believe you me, life will live that answer through you, not in the time that you wanted to usually, but in the right time and in the right way. And so she has these moments, and we've been working a lot lately with really recognizing that there is this world of resistance that she's living in right now because it is so agonizingly painful. And then there is this whole other world, and she lives by a lake, and she's really beginning to understand that the sound of the bird or the sound of the waves that lap against the shore there, or the dance of the light on the water, or the clouds that pass through the sky, those don't require her mind in order to exist. Her stories about life are like a flea on the back of an elephant that is trying to control the elephant. And yet right outside of all these stories of fear and loss is this whole other world, the field of being, that we are at one with, but we don't emerge with it when we're imprisoned in that windowless bedroom of our mind. So what she's reminding all of us is start little. Start with the little pains. The little pains of a sadness that comes as, you know, you're watching the television and a puppy dog is lost. That is such an opportunity to come in and just notice what's going on in your body, because when we get caught in a story in our head, the body will tighten. And so that's an opportunity to come and notice. Maybe it's an elephant sitting on your chest and you continue to watch the television, but there's a part of you that's breathing into that tightness, that is bringing spaciousness to that tightness. If you do this for any length of time, you'll begin to be able to hear the stories, the very, very young parts of you that are evoked when you see this puppy dog that is lost, because you got lost. You got lost and locked into the prison of your mind. And it can be the little pains of you know, a nick, you know, on your finger, you know, as you are cooking dinner, or a friend that said that she was going to call at 7 o'clock and now it's 8 o'clock. And, you know, this is not life-threatening, you know, but you can notice that you've got a knot in your stomach, you know, and you just give that attention. You know, just like the woman, she went and explored this pain in her back, and it wasn't this solid thing anymore. And we go exploring and with the little things, and slowly and surely we begin to be able to not react to our pain. We begin to be able to respond to it, and we begin to be able to give it space. So just like my hand on your wrist, I let it go. And yes, the pain, you know, hurts still for a while because it had been gripped. But slowly and surely the pain calms down because that grip is not there. So one of the best metaphors I've ever come up with what this is like going outside into a very cold winter day and you forgot your gloves, and so you come in the house and, you know, many of your fingers are white and you know, and they're beginning to feel some pain. And so you go and take your hand and you put it under lukewarm water. And here is the whiteness of your fingers that has had the blood cut off from it because everything contracted. You know, our that happens to our physical pain. You know, we actually hurt the injured, you know, cells of the ligaments and the tendons around our pain by tightening down around it. And emotional pain is the same thing. We tighten down around it and we cut it off from our hearts. And so you put your hand underneath this water and the blood begins to come back into your fingers. And it hurts. It does hurt to have that, those tingles and that aliveness begin to come back into your hand. But then when it is fully, you know, the blood is there again, your hand feels so alive. So that is what it is like for us, that that we, in our emotional and mental pains also, that as we turn towards, they can actually feel like they're actually becoming stronger, mostly because we are releasing the filters between ourself and our pain, the filters of eating the thing and drinking the thing and smoking the thing and just staying busy and blaming other people for our pain and trying to understand where it came from. We love that. If we just figure out where it came from and how to manage it, you know, and I'm not knocking that. That's really important, you know, in a certain phase in healing. But what we want to do is be present for our pain enough so the pain can let go. We don't need to let it go. We don't need to figure anything out. It is that process of turning towards. And it can be a little bit more painful, but remember, pain is something to be curious about. Pain is something to explore and use your body, Use it in the little pains, because all pain, you know, is even mental and emotional pain is expressed somewhere in our bodies, and sometimes it's a lot easier to work with the physicalness of it, you know, and as you strengthen the muscle of your curiosity and the muscle of your spaciousness, then you can go into your mind, into the actual stories of in your mind, and just like this woman is learning how to do with the fear in her mind that everything is only going to get worse. And when she has those moments of space around it, she begins to recognize that those are just stories. So keep it simple. Work with the little pains. Take the concept of softening and going towards your experience rather than away. But most essentially, recognize that all of your pain is so deeply longing to have you not push it away, to not judge it, to not hate it. This woman who I was working with years ago in the wanting to commit suicide, she was beginning to open to it, and then she went right back into mind, but I hate this part of myself, you know, it's just ruined my life. And I just invited her to see, you know, how tight she was getting. And then I turned her towards it again, and she could see the space, and she could realize that this wasn't something to hate or fear. It was something to befriend. And I think it really helps to understand that every single pain you've ever had is not just your pain. It's our pain. Right at that moment that you stubbed your toe, there is at least 100,000 people on the face of our planet that have stubbed their toe right at that moment, you know. And, you know, how many zillions of people have died, you know, when you're dying, you know, or had cancer or had back pain, that this is our pain. And the amazing thing that begins to happen as you begin to move from this is my pain and, you know, I am all alone and nobody else knows, you know, this kind of pain, and you begin to realize that this is our pain, you get more space around it. And in that space, an amazingly wonderful thing begins to happen. You begin to be able to meet people right where they are. For somebody that is exhibiting, you know, a kind of pain that is, for you, close to the surface, you don't push them away. Even if they are, you know, in helpless, hopeless despair, because you have met your helpless, hopeless despair that is a familiar place for you, you're not afraid of it in the other person. And so you can give it space, and believe you me, we need many more people on this planet that are discovering how to meet themselves exactly as they are, but most especially in discomfort, because discomfort is, our resistance to it is what makes up the prison walls of our separate conditioned self. So befriend discomfort. Go towards it. Be with it. And become a place of healing on our planet. Namaste.
Thank you for listening to this edition of What's in Your Way is the Way with your host, Mary O'Malley. You can access Mary's offerings on her websites, maryomalley.com and whatsintheway.com. Join Mary next time to experience the peace and joy that is always with you on Evolutionary Voices for the Quantum Age. Heard Monday through Friday at 8 a.m. and 8 p.m. Eastern on the Dream Vision 7 Radio Network.